and welcome to another episode of the After Buzz podcast. My name is Nico Edgeman, your host of the After Buzz, and of course with me is Buzz Adams.
Hello.
What is up, buddy?
Oh, you know, personally or in the world?
You personally?
I'm going to have a lot of work done at the dentist.
Oh, you got some messed up teeth?
I guess so.
Porous? Real porous?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Well,
but they did have, like, so I had been going to one dentist office, and when it was time for your cleaning, you know, like a tooth cleaning,
yeah,
they just got a toothbrush and did a better than average brush.
Right, right.
And I thought, oh, I guess they don't do, like, the cleaning that I remember from when I was a kid.
Like.
So I went to this new dentist, and they still do it. It was just this one dentist I was going to, but they got in there, man, and they were knocking out chunks of, you know, like
rocks,
quarter ounce chunk of steak and stuff back there.
Oh, my God.
So I got to start flossing more.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you use the little floss picks.
Well, and also, I'm going to show you something. So you see this tooth here?
Mm-hmm.
That's one that they tried to save after my bike accident a few years ago.
It's not doing too good.
I don't know if that's going to make it.
Oh, no.
It's
hanging on?
Yeah, it's hanging on. It's got a hole in it.
Well, good luck to you,
yeah,
man.
Let's
check in a little bit. We'll find out.
If you're going to
months.
A dentist and they don't do the cleaning with the thing that goes, maybe think about going to a different dentist.
You know, my dentist, the hygienist, takes x-rays every time to make sure that you don't have cavities.
Well, this new place I went to took x-rays.
Yeah, I think that's standard practice.
The first day.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll do it every time, though.
I think it's every other time or something. All right. Anyways, all right, let's get into today's After Buzz podcast. I'm super excited for today's topic because it combines two of my favorites, history and food.
Uh-huh.
Food, history. And this is a Nico original. I came up with this list myself, me and my writing partner, ChatGPT, and the whole thing, OG, original gangsta. You ready?
We should have a fictional character named Chad GPT.
Chad G.
Chad, it's Chad, middle initial G, last name?
PT.
PT.
PT. PT.
Chad GPT.
Chad GPT.
Okay.
I like it. All right. So this is going to be a list of historic and ancient condiments.
A lot of sauces through history, I'm
yes.
willing to wager.
Yes, this is a list of many sauces, and we're going to get a history for each, the ingredients, what it might have tasted and looked like, and a little fun fact. All right, first up.
Ketchup.
Catsup. No. It is garum from ancient Rome, or garum. I don't know how these are going to be pronounced,
right.
but probably wrong either way. So this originated probably from Greece, and it was probably called garos in Greek and kind of Phoenician, Carthaginian fish preservation method. But the Romans perfected it, and they turned it into a booming industry. Mm. It was produced across the empire from Spain to Syria, and it was traded in amphorae or amphorae. Do you know what those are?
Those are the clay pots.
Yeah, those classic Greco-Roman.
Yeah, an urn.
An urn,
like
basically.
I think I've heard them called urns before.
So what would it be made of? It would be made of usually small fish, anchovies, sardines, and then they would be cut open, their entrails would be all mixed together.
Fish guts?
Yeah, the fish guts.
The fish guts?
Yes.
How about the rest of the fish?
And the fish. They would be all mixed together. And then it would be layered.
Sounds like somebody needs a bass-o-matic.
A bass-o-matic.
Delicious bass.
It would be layered in the urn or the pot between layers of salt. And then maybe they would add some herbs. And then they would just leave it in the sun for months.
That must have stunk to high heaven.
Yeah. It stunk so bad.
Yep. How bad did it stink?
That garum factories were, the evidence has been found, they were purposely built downwind to keep the smell from offending polite Roman society. Mm. And also Pliny in plenty one of
doesn't rum downwind depend on which way the wind's blowing too, though?
I guess geographically you might be able to figure
out. Outside the city limits, guys.
Yeah. Pliny said that people who live
near Pliny the Younger or Pliny the
I
Elder?
Think this is Pliny the Younger. Mm-hmm. Said that anybody who lives near garum factories either can't smell or something else. It was a very witty.
So it's kind of like a meat rendering plant would be.
Yeah. Like an abattoir. That's what he said. Pliny joked that people living nearby must have been saints or at least unable to smell.
Mm.
Okay, next up.
I guess you get used to anything. I had an aunt and uncle who lived like a mile from the airport, and that was hell.
Oh, but I should mention, it was super popular. It was like intensely salty and savory. It had like umami flavors. They put it on everything.
Bring out
the garum. It would be on
tables. Bring out the fish guts.
No, it would just be... No, it would eventually... The fish guts and everything would ferment into a liquid. That would be...
Did it still smell horrible in liquid form?
It would change, definitely, to become less offensive. But it was a very powerful taste. And you can go on YouTube and you can see videos of them trying to make it these days. Next up, number two. Liquamen. Mm-hmm. Also from ancient Rome. It's basically the same thing.
Fish guts again?
Yeah, it's a generic term for a fish sauce. Later, it was differentiated as like thicker, less refined, still had some of the chunks that was used daily. But this is a fun fact.
I like my fish guts extra chunky.
yeah, exactly. like peanut butter, right? You want it smooth? Yeah. You want smooth fish guts or chunky? Fun fact, though.
Choosy mothers choose fish guts.
This might have been the first instance of branding where liquamen was just the generic term and garum was like the special factory of generic versus brand loyalties.
Got it.
Next up.
So like you could go to the store and get Dr. Pepper or you could get Dr. Thunder.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Number three, Oxymel. This was an ancient Greece medicinal tonic, but the Romans took it and thought, now this sounds good for cooking instead.
Okay.
So Hippocrates used it as a salve for wounds. It includes honey, wine vinegar, and like thyme and oregano.
That's actually the tastiest condiment you've described so far.
Honey, vinegar, thyme, oregano.
Yeah, I could probably choke that down. The fish guts, I'm not so sure.
It was goldeny syrup and had a sweet little tart flavor. Hippocrates recommended it for coughs and wounds. Roman soldiers drank it before battle for what they called vigor.
Mm.
Number four, silphium, which came from ancient Cyrene, which was in Turkey. And Africa, a North African giant fennel whose resin was prized in Greece and Rome. It's so valuable it appeared on coins, and it became extinct by the first century because it was overproduced. You might know it because it was used for getting your dick hard.
Silphium was.
Yeah, and like an aphrodisiac.
And it went extinct? You can't find it today?
You cannot find it today. It was overly farmed. The fun fact I have, Pliny wrote that the last stalk was presented to and eaten by Emperor Nero. It was kind of like garlicky, you know, whatever fennel would be like now. And it was the resin from the stalks and the roots that would be grated, powdered, or dissolved, I guess snorted, or put into like a food or drink.
All right.
Number five. Defrutum. Or sapa, from ancient Rome.
Is this just Roman?
Well, Rome conquered the world, so a lot of the stuff was maybe from Africa, but used in Rome, you know. Or from Turkey, but used by the Romans. And remember, they like ruled the world for like 1,000 years.
Well, they ruled part of the world. You're not even touching on the Aztecs and the Mayans.
They weren't around back then. I don't think there's evidence of them.
There were people. They might
I think
not
the
have been
Olmecs
called,
or like the Toltecs fine. Are like the oldest ones.
I'm saying, I bet they had a whole different sauce history in Asia, for instance.
I'm getting to that.
Okay. All right.
Number five, defrutum sapa. It was a Roman method to preserve grapes. Also, it was used as a sweetener before they had sugar. So they would get a fresh grape. They would boil the grapes down in lead pots, maybe adding some bay leaves and cinnamon, and it would turn into a dark syrup with a little tang. Then the vessels, the lead vessels would be cooled, and because it was lead...
It probably did not bode well if long-term health of the average Roman, I would guess.
Absolutely. Mm. And actually...
Also, you've heard about the aqueducts, right?
Right.
The water, sometimes, which was used for drinking...
Lead
as well.
They think that lead poisoning might have actually contributed to the general aggressiveness of the Romans over a period.
But I've heard it speculated that it could, the lead, you know, like long-term lead poisoning led to lower birth rates.
Oh.
And also, long-term exposure to lead can reduce your mental acuity. So there are some people that think they got lazy and
that's why the Rome fell.
Mm-hmm. And there were few of them to fight off the Visigoths or whatever.
I could totally see that.
The lead just gets a crazy lot of the blame.
I mean, there's paint chips that have made people crazier or just as crazy probably around now. I just think it's interesting that they had, like, of course, their own little sugar use, like, for their coffee or whatever. It was like, give me some defrutum. Give me some sapa. Number 6. Muri. This is from the medieval times of the Middle East. It originated in Baghdad, possibly inspired by the Romans' garum. And
Are we back to fish guts again?
Okay, well, it was not fish guts, but it was fermented grains, like barley, dough, water, salt, and then just left to ferment for weeks.
In the sun again?
In the sun again. Maybe spiced with like cumin. It was a dark brown liquid that was kind of bitter and savory.
Like a soy sauce?
Soy sauce. It says soy sauce. Very soy sauce-like. Fun fact, there are still some recipes that show that it was fermented in warm manure pits to control the temperature. Probably like in the pot, it was put into the shit to keep the temperature hot.
I can't even imagine like what composting. A manure pit would look like.
Like composting.
But it's where they store the manure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so. No, I don't know the specifics of the manure pit logistics.
Still better than modern day British cuisine.
Number 7. Soy sauce. Ancient China. It evolved from something called jiang. What they did was they would just ferment soybeans and then grain, like the medieval Middle East, and they would leave it to become a liquid. Basically, get the soybeans, the paste, everything, just leave it in the sun, liquid.
So, how long do we have to go until we get to ketchup?
It takes a while. But what they really did prize about it was letting the wheat, the roasted wheat and the soybeans get moldy. The mold is essential for this umami rich, salty, dark reddish brown sauce.
I wonder if it ever led to something called ergot poisoning.
That's a good question, which is a mold that you get on wheat stuff.
Right. Yeah. And I've heard some historians speculate it could have been ergot that caused hallucinations that led to the Salem witch trials.
Isn't what's the green chasing the green fairy, the liquor that you can drink that might have
absinthe?
Yeah, absinthe. Isn't that supposed to have ergot in it?
Wormwood.
Wormwood. Yeah. Okay. Wormwood. Right. Fun fact though, in China, it could take about 2 years to ferment one batch of soy sauce. Today, chemical versions can be created in days.
Okay.
Number 8, Nampla Nuak Mam. Ancient Southeast Asia, like Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore. This is a fish sauce indigenous to coastal Southeast Asia for thousands of years. It was independently made from garum, so there's no relation. But fish sauces abound in the ancient world.
Boy.
Anchovy, small fish, salt, fermented in barrels. But these guys would add sugar, palm sugar. So it would be a little bit sweeter.
Oh, wait, so they did have sugar.
They did.
Of some kind. So, in nature,
I
somewhere.
I assume that the palm sugar would be more of a Southeast Asia kind of thing.
Oh.
I don't know how often you would find that.
Maybe in
Rome, it wasn't that close.
Okay.
I based that on absolutely nothing. Fun fact, Vietnamese Nguyen Nam Ni, and that is a correct pronunciation, I guarantee it. It's like considered virgin olive oil. It's the first pressing. And is considered the first pressing of the fish sauce, by the way. It's considered the champagne of fish sauces. And it's a current fish sauce that they have
now. Thought the term virgin olive oil referred to something else.
Did you really?
Before she met Popeye. Yeah?
I mean, I appreciate it. Joanna would probably give you a little bit of a more enthusiastic response.
Virgin olive oil.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. Before she married Popeye, right. Unless she was a slut.
Well, she was...
I bet it was Bluto who finally gave it to her. Speaking of Blutos... Oh, my flip-flop fell off. Okay, number 9. From medieval to modern Italy, it's Collatura di Lalici.
Milk? Something milk?
Nope.
No.
Fish sauce.
God damn, what the... Honestly. You know, if fish sauce, if sauce made out of fish used to be so popular, why don't they have it around anywhere today?
It's widely used today in Asian cuisine, I would say, at least.
Well, I've never seen it at Albertsons or anything.
Fish sauce? It's right there.
What?
Fish sauce is right there in the ingredients.
Wait. Made out of fish?
Yeah.
Guts.
I don't know about the... They might still use the guts, yeah.
There's a sauce made out of fish on American grocery store shelves.
Absolutely.
As we
it's
speak.
A very widely used condiment today.
What's it called? What's the brand
sauce.
Name?
Kikkoman? I don't know.
That's
they make
that's
lots
soy
of things.
Sauce.
They make lots of things. Okay. Yes, though. I am kind of weirded out that there are so many different versions of fish sauce. Number 10. Mustard. From ancient Rome slash...
Now we're talking.
Slash Gaul. Now we're getting to the Gaulish, the Ghoulish.
What, are you talking about
ancient
what we would
Gaul.
Call France?
Yeah, what we would call France.
Mustard, huh?
Romans learned mustard making from the Gauls. Mustard actually means burning the must. And it refers to mixing seeds with grape must.
You know, as I'm sitting here thinking about it, I don't have a single clue what are in mustard.
Oh, grape must is freshly crushed grape juice that includes the skin, seeds, and stems of the grapes. It's the initial stage in winemaking and is also used as a sweetener. Unlike filtered pasteurized grape juice, it's thick. Huh. So they would mix that with mustard seeds.
Wait a minute. Does modern... mustard, like you would buy at a grocery store in America.
I don't think it has the grape must.
It's not made with grapes because it doesn't taste grapey at all.
No. It's made with vinegar. And it was back then. So the ingredients for the mustard for Romans was mustard seeds, black or brown, wine, vinegar, and sometimes honey or herbs.
Almost any kind of sandwich, mustard is the way to go for your condiment.
You know,
the exceptions being roast beef sandwich... You want mayonnaise on that.
I would agree that
but
mustard
a
is the key.
A hot dog.
It just
hero,
cuts the richness like so much. But it wasn't used all the time as a food. It was used for sore muscles.
Mustard.
Mustard.
I'll keep that in mind.
Hey, put a little mustard on it. What's that mean when somebody says put a little mustard on it?
Like put some extra effort or you know, if in sports, throw the ball harder.
Just throw it a little harder.
Just, you know, a little more oomph.
Number 11, chutneys from ancient India.
Definitely heard of chutney.
Chutneys go back a long time. Still around. It was mentioned in early Sanskrit texts, and it was used as a digestive to help the digestion. Fruits, mango, tamarind, dates, spices, coriander, cumin, chili. Do you know what coriander is?
I know it as a crossword clue.
Yeah, so the plant that coriander comes from.
I don't know.
Cilantro.
Cilantro?
Cilantro.
Okay.
Is coriander. Actually, in Britain, they don't use the word cilantro. They just call cilantro coriander.
Okay.
Also, paprika. You know what that is?
Again, I've seen the word before for sure. Don't know what it is.
Bell peppers. Just dried out bell peppers and then crushed in a little powder.
I didn't have any idea.
Right?
I guess I'm the type of guy who doesn't want to know how the sausage is made, you know?
You just want to eat that fucking sausage.
I don't want to think too much. I don't want to think too much about anything I eat.
So originally, chutneys from ancient India were these like sweet, kind of mostly hot and sour pastes and sauces, chunky. But the British, once they colonized India, they Victorianized chutney into something closer to a spiced jam. Number 12, mead honey glazes. Now, this actually goes back to prehistoric Europe, Bronze Age Europe, where glazes were used on meats for feasts. Honey, mead, herbs of thyme, and rosemary. That sounds delicious, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, I love it all. Parsley, sage,
a
rosemary,
mead, honey, glaze.
Thyme, all of it.
Fun fact, honey's antibacterial nature helped preserve the food.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that?
That I didn't know.
Number 13. Pickles.
Pickles? I think you're mispronouncing it there.
It's pickles.
Yep, it looks like that, but it's actually pronounced pickles.
Well, you're not too far off. It's historically vinegared vegetables and relishes from West Africa adapted into the Caribbean by enslaved Africans. Yeah. Cabbage, carrots, onions, hot peppers, vinegar, thyme, garlic, allspice.
Wait.
It's basically pickles.
Okay, but you're describing relish, it sounds like.
Well, relish is maybe more chopped up and fine versus the whole pickled product.
But we're talking about sauces, condiments.
Well, condiments.
Right, so it couldn't have just been a pickle.
Well, it's not cucumber. Cabbage can be pickled. Carrots can be pickled. Onions can be pickled. Hot peppers can be pickled.
I forget that.
Did you think it was pickles or just the cucumber things that you get in the grocery store that are green and pickle juice?
When I hear pickle, that's where my mind goes.
I do think it's interesting.
To the classic.
That
the mighty dill.
The mighty dill. Such a big dill. It's called pickles. P-I-K-L-I-Z.
Pickles.
Is that where we get the word pickle from?
It has to be, right?
It has to be.
Just makes too much sense.
Fun fact, Haitian tradition says the brine of pickles is what the ultimate hangover cure is. They probably were just getting electrolytes.
Yeah.
And water.
Yeah, that's probably right.
Yeah. All right, number 14. And our final ancient condiment.
Too bad.
Sumac.
Well, I thought sumac was a name of a kind of tree.
It is. Mm. And I think there's like something called sumac poisoning from the leaves, the resin of the leaves.
Like poison ivy?
Like poison ivy, okay. Yeah. But it's been used since antiquity from the Levant, which would be Israel.
Just like the cradle of civilization, right?
No, it's, the Levant is Israel, Lebanon, Syria, everything right there on the edge. I don't think it doesn't include Iraq and Iran.
Oh, okay.
But they wouldn't use the leaves. They would use the berries, and they would grind the berries up into like a red powder, and it would be like tangy and lemony and a little fruity. And they would they would use it as a medicine. They would put it on whatever. Like our version of tahine.
I don't even know what tahine is.
You know, it's the Mexican spice, the like lemon spice you see people put on fruit and stuff. Lemon chili.
Oh, okay.
Stuff. Anyways, before lemons were common, sumac was the main souring agent in Middle East.
Before lemons were what?
Common.
Meaning they didn't have lemons back then?
This comes from that area, so probably not as many lemons in ancient Israel as maybe somewhere else. Or maybe just not as common.
I wonder if lemons are a crossbred fruit of some kind.
Yes.
Are they? Or it makes sense.
Current lemons are definitely from something that was...
They didn't have the lemon the way we would think of it.
Today, necessarily. Yeah.
They wouldn't have it back in prehistory, I guess.
Yeah, probably not widely. Probably wouldn't be widely commercially available. But there was a new study that came out that I think showed that apples come from tomatoes.
I did see a headline about that. That it was the first apples were derived.
Was it apples?
No, it was tomatoes were derived from potatoes.
Yes. Tomatoes and potatoes.
I saw that headline.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find it right now. Yeah, tomatoes and potatoes, more than just culinary companions, they both belong to the nightshade family. A surprising evolutionary. Recent scientific research.
As in deadly nightshade.
Studies indicate that the potato actually evolved from a tomato ancestor like 9 million years ago.
You're telling me that the potato evolved from
the tomato.
The tomato.
So it does matter, tomato or tomato, potato or potato. All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the AfterBuzz podcast. Hope you enjoyed our tour of food history. Well, let us know what you think. Nico@KaleyQ.com, Buzz@KaleyQ.com, or leave a message on our neckline. That is 915-521-NECK. That is 915-521-NECK.
521-6325.
All right, talk to y'all next time.